Paul, if we could have the PowerPoint up, please, that would be great. Thank you. So, three men and a baby. But you'll notice there is a question mark after that. Quite possibly some of us here will recognise the three characters in that fairly ancient film, Three Men and a Baby. And it just struck me that it was kind of a title for today that worked reasonably well, as long as it has that question mark there. See, probably there were not three wise men, three kings, three magi, call them what you will. The Bible never says that there are. Never says that there are three of them. Three gifts, yes. But instead it's left deliberately vague, it seems to me, that magi from the east, stargazers, yes, wise men probably, came to worship Jesus. And probably, as well, the Magi did not visit a baby. Bit of a shame, really, isn't it? Because it makes a nice picture there. But instead, we're told, they found the child with his mother Mary. So it may well have been some time after that, after the birth of the child. Which, of course, just goes to show us that popular tradition has a lot to answer for. What do we know about this story? Well, if we can move on to the next slide, please. We know, first of all, about the inquiry of the Magi, who did make that journey, 500-600 miles plus, all because they saw a star. And their interpretation of that sign of the star that they saw from the east was that a new king had been born in Judea. And so they came and they went to the obvious place. They went to the royal palace, the place where Herod, the puppet king really to the Romans, was in place, and said, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." So we do know about that inquiry. Next slide, please. We also know about the insecurity of Herod. We're told that when King Herod heard this, when he heard of their question, their inquiry, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. I guess that you might be too if you were king. I'm not sure that any of us have ever really been a king of a nation. But if you were king of that nation and you were told that someone else was going to come to take over from you, and you knew also that it wasn't any relation of yours, you might be a bit disturbed by that. Herod was quite plainly insecure about his future. And we learn later on in the story, don't we, that Herod planned to kill the one who might be king. We also learn, I think, next slide, about a certain indifference of the chief priests and the teachers of the law, who were the advisors to King Herod. He did at least go to the right place to ask about this one who would be king of the Jews, although you would have thought he might have known for himself. So the chief priests and the teachers of the law were able to answer Herod's question about the king of the Jews, where he was to come from. Their answer was in Bethlehem, in Judea. They had the right answers. They knew what the good Jew was supposed to believe, and they backed it up with prophecy. But they didn't do anything about it. If it was possible that the Christ had come, should they not go off and investigate for themselves and find out more? It seems that their minds were closed to the possibilities. And then fourthly, we learn about the inspiration of the Magi. They didn't share the indifference of the religious people. Rather, they continued on their Star Trek, their quest. And they found, we're told, the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. And their gifts tell us everything that we need to know about that baby. They tell us they were truly inspired gifts. Well, we know what those gifts are, don't we? We know that they're gold and frankincense and myrrh. If we go to the first screen, well, we see a representation of the first gift of gold. That, of course, isn't how it arrives, is it? But it comes from the ore, comes out of the rocks. Many of us here will be wearing some gold today, I would imagine. I know that's my gold. Yeah, gold wedding rings, maybe gold. Anyone get gold for Christmas? Anything gold? Ah, cheapskates. I must admit, I have in the past bought gold or something with gold in it for my wife. And I'm sure she will confirm that. She'll probably say, it's been like, oh, you're wearing something now. Hey, what a wonderful life you are, dear. she's probably also thinking, well, it's been a few years. Maybe it's about time. There you go. But we know that gold is something that's valuable, isn't it? In the earth as a planet, it's a metal that is precious. It's in quite short supply. Way before the wise men came bringing their gift of gold to Jesus, gold was seen as a precious thing. Back in the book of 1 Kings, there's a description of the huge amount of gold that King Solomon used in the building of the first temple from all the gold that was brought to him by the people. So the people of his country, his subjects, the Israelites, they brought gold from their own resources. They gave sacrificially, generously for the building of the first temple to their gods, to our God. Gold's often talked about in the Old Testament. One of the Psalms, Psalm 72, says these words. It says, endow the king with justice, O God, the royal son with your righteousness. Now, in the first instance, that was a Psalm of David, the last of the Psalms of David in that section. And it was probably talking about himself, his son, perhaps Solomon, when Solomon had been born. Endow him with justice, the royal son with your righteousness. But then it carries on in that psalm with words that maybe look forward to the one whom our wise men, our kings, came to worship, saying, all kings will bow down to him, all nations will serve him. May gold from Sheba be given to him. May people ever pray for him and bless him all day long. And in that gold is a reminder, and yes, it's very small, that this baby Jesus comes to be king over all kings, king of kings. The second gift, frankincense, looks something like this. And frankincense in its kind of raw state really is resin of a tree. It is found in places, this tree, such as Somalia, modern-day Somalia, and also southern Arabia, which will be a little bit closer to the area of in which Jesus was born and grew up. Frankincense is, in fact, mentioned by the prophet Jeremiah as coming at that time from the land of Sheba, which we believe to be sort of Ethiopia kind of direction, the place from which the Queen of Sheba comes, who also famously came to visit King Solomon in the Old Testament. Frankincense is mentioned in the book of Exodus as one of the ingredients of incense, the kind of incense that was burnt before what was seen as the throne of God, the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle and later the temple to God. Incense, which is referenced in Exodus as being holy to the Lord. So it's something that was really the gift of a priest. Gold, gift for a king. Frankincense, the gift for a priest. It's interesting sometimes to look at different words that give meaning to priest. And I discovered that the Latin word for priest is in fact pontiflex. It's quite a nice word, really, isn't it? It maybe gives some understanding to why the Pope is called pontiff sometimes, pontiflex. And pontiflex is a word that literally means bridge builder. It's an interesting word for a priest, isn't it? But how much more interesting is it in terms of what we know of Jesus? It speaks of what Jesus came to do in coming into this world. And somehow those magi, those wise men, seem to have known that in the gift that they brought. Jesus comes to build a bridge between God and human beings. A bridge by which, well, I suppose in Jesus, God himself has come to us, but also a bridge by which we can come to God. And then there's the third gift, which in some ways looks very like the second gift, but a little bit smaller, that of myrrh. And myrrh is the gift for one who is to die. Now, myrrh is the resin of a tree in the same family, apparently, as the one giving frankincense, which kind of explains why it looks so similar there. It's a multi-purpose item. Psalm 45, verse 8, refers to it in the sense of something that's used to freshen up garments, to make them smell nice. In Esther, chapter 2 and verse 12. We remember Esther is a queen of great beauty. It's mentioned as beauty treatment. It's also something which we find in the New Testament later on at the end of Jesus' life, mixed with wine as a painkiller and offered to Jesus on the cross. Also something that's used as a means of embalming the body. Other bodies too, but particularly the body of Jesus in this instance. So it is the gift for one who is to die. Now take a look at this picture coming up of a branch from the tree from which myrrh comes. What do you see on that branch? Thorns. Interesting, isn't it? Thorns, myrrh, a crown of thorns. Maybe very like the crown which was placed on the head of Jesus as he was nailed to a cross and lifted high. I think if we look at those thorns, we wouldn't particularly want them to be placed on our head. Even just resting there could scratch us. To be pressed more firmly in would do a fair amount of damage. Myrrh, the gift for one who is to die. So we have gold and we have frankincense and we have myrrh. We have three gifts that however many wise men there were, however many kings there were, they brought with them to give to a baby. there's something out there somewhere, isn't there, that talks about, well, if it had been three wise women, they'd have brought nappies and Johnson baby powder and other kind of more useful gifts. But I think the gold and frankincense and myrrh are far more significant gifts in what they tell us about who Jesus is and what he came to be and to do. He came to be king of people's hearts and priest through whom we can cross to God by his own death on a cross. Holman Hunt, he crops up a lot with religious paintings, but he painted this picture called The Shadow of Death. And you won't be able to see all of the detail in that. The picture is a bit small. But what you see here is Jesus at work in the carpenter's shop, the adult Jesus at work in the carpenter's shop. And Mary, his mother, is also there crouching down. There's a table behind her, actually. And what you can't quite make out in this particular picture is that the gifts of the Magi are on that table. There's a crown there, seemingly of gold. There is frankincense. There is myrrh. And as Jesus stretches to loosen up after a hard day's labour in his carpenter's shed, his shadow appears behind on the wall. A shadow like the cross to which Jesus will be nailed at the end of his life. And really the shadow of the cross hovers over Jesus throughout his life. And it's the cross that meets our questions about him with his answer. His answer on the cross, really saying, "This is how much I love you." He is worthy of the gifts of the wise men, of gold, of frankincense, and of myrrh. And we too are called to bring our gifts. I have to say, I don't particularly want to give away my wedding ring to Jesus. I think my wife might complain. I haven't got anything in particular at home that's like frankincense, I don't think, or myrrh. And we may feel that we don't really have anything to give to Jesus. But actually we do. We have much that we can bring. But I think it's really summed up well for me in the song that will be the final song we sing today. And the final verse of that song, of Christina Rossetti's In the Bleak Midwinter, where it says, "What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet, what I can I give him? Give my heart." And ultimately, that's what Jesus desires from all of us. Doesn't demand it from us, he gives us the choice. But he desires that we should acknowledge him as King of our hearts. That we should understand that he is the priest who has built the bridge by which we can cross from death to life because of Jesus. That he desires that we should know that we are forgiven because of his death on the cross as we trust in him. And if we do those things, if we believe those things, then we will indeed give him our hearts and our minds and our lives. Amen.